Back to Sports Talk for Fans by Fans, episode 23. Brian here. I got Tages with me. How you doing?
Doing good. How you doing, Brian?
Doing pretty good. It's basketball is almost coming to an end, so it's getting a little sad. Getting to that final big series almost. We're a little, I guess, halfway through, so it's getting real. Final four, it's kind of crazy. So we're going to just, Tages and I are going to do our usual basketball. We're going to break down the basketball playoff stuff going on, the series just that ended, some kind of some news, and the upcoming two series that are going to kick us off right before the championship. So getting into it, the first thing I want to throw out is some news that came out that I thought was kind of weird. I don't know if you got a chance to see this, but Zion and his family, you know, he's only been there 2 years, and they already say that, you know, the organization's not good for him, and they're not building properly around him. They want him to move already. So I don't know if you've seen that, or what do you think about that, Tages?
Yeah, no, I just pulled that up and looked at it. And so I'm not sure if those reports came out before or after Stan was fired. I think Zion, you know, that was one of the complaints. You got to keep him happy. If I'm New Orleans, he's in every meeting. We're talking about, you know, the direction of the future. Lonzo, I think, is someone that'll be, my understanding is, like, he likes playing with. So if you know, and he's up in free agency. So, you know, I'd right cut him a check to do anything I can to keep Zion happy. What are your thoughts on the situation?
Yeah, I think just like you said, like a superstar, you have to do whatever you can for basketball. You only have so many, there's only so many superstars in the league. And when you get one, you kind of have to do whatever you can to build around it. And it's just a matter of building the right team around. I think 2 years is kind of quick for that team to just instantly say that it's not going to work there. And you think of Lonzo, you know, he's already been linked to other teams. Like, I'm a Bulls fan. He's already been linked to the Bulls. Like, the Bulls want a point guard. So it will be interesting to see if they give him that max contract. Just to keep him, which, you know, is that the right move? With this is the year there are so many point guards available. In 2 years, there's a ton of superstars available. So I think the family put in a tough position, the franchise, to, because if you react too quickly to build it, you could be missing out on some great free agents in the next year or two. So I kind of hate when the family gets involved and says stuff like that, but at the same time, you know, I guess, you know, they want to force their hand. But I think you also saw during the season how he just openly confessed his love for New York Knicks, right? You saw that?
Well, you know, I think that RJ Barrett friendship is a real thing. And, yeah. You know, it doesn't seem like the family and him are happy in New Orleans. So, you know, that talk isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I think, and you can see firsthand, some of these major cities are just at a big advantage over some of these other cities. Just, you know, not only but for marketing and, you know, the big name and just, but, you know, he's talking about Madison Square Garden, how he lights up talking about it. And it's kind of hard if you're the Pelicans. I mean, first off, worst nickname in all of basketball, maybe the Pelicans. I think
my wife would agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's
not a ferocious bird.
No, not at all. Slightly annoying. Okay, yeah, let's move on. But I saw that and I thought that was kind of interesting, just as an initial first thing. But the next thing we talk about, the Kemba Walker trade, which, you know, that was pretty quick right after, you know, in the second round. And honestly, I had to look it up. I didn't even know you could make trades in the playoffs. So that kind of caught me off guard. I learned something there. I don't know if you knew that, Tages, but
I think it's like an agreement in principle of two general managers that are buddies or something. So I don't think it's going to be official for a little bit. But
yeah, you know,
that's the first time I've kind of seen one in middle of playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I did the old Google search, and the only thing it told me was once the teams are eliminated, it's free game. So I'm not sure if it's like what you said, where it's an agreement until maybe the season, quote unquote, ends or something. But it looks like it's a done deal. So the trade that we have right now is Brad Stevens' first deal. Obviously, he stepped down as a coach and he moved up to the general manager for the Celtics. And so his first move, and I guess, you know, who would know better firsthand than the former coach of the team? But Kemba, with his injuries, his huge contract, I think they wanted to do what they could to get out of it. So they packaged Kemba in a first round pick. And I think it was also a 2025 second, something just weird. Going to OKC, and OKC is sending Al Horford and his contract, Moses Brown, and a 2023 second round pick. So it sounds like that's the trade. So I guess the big things to look at is OKC gets Kemba Walker, and they get the third first round pick in this upcoming draft. So they have fourth to 16th and another first round pick later on. So it looks like they're kind of building maybe a good core there with these picks if they hit on them properly. The Kemba Walker deal has 2 years left at $73 million. So maybe they treat him like Chris Paul, where they kind of recoup the value and then flip him later on. But at the same time, Al Horford's 35 years old, and he's still got 2 years, $53 million. So to me, that part's kind of weird for the Celtics. And if you look, Tejas, they have Tristan Thompson. They have Robert Williams, both under contract. You now add Moses Brown and Al Horford. That's four centers, if you will, because Al Horford's kind of a center now. What do you think about that, with Boston stacking up on centers to free up a little bit of money?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The big thing is I think that, you know, Kemba had two years left, and yep. Horford has 1 year left. So, you know, they shed money, and they, don't have a long-term commitment. I think it was a big price to give up, though. You know, that's 16 pick. Yeah. You know, if I'm the Celtics, you know, and I'm looking at my roster, you know, you got the two studs and Tatum and Brown, but you know, I just don't think that's enough. And I think you need that kind of gamble that you hit on the 16th pick. You know, obviously the 16th pick is nothing guaranteed, but you look at some of the people like, you know, I think Booker was in the teens. You know, Michael Porter Jr. was in the teens. Obviously Giannis was, you know, in the teens. So, you know, I think that's kind of just, you know, I would have rather taken my shot if I'm the Celtics and just hope you got super lucky and really hit on an amazing pick, instead of kind of, you know, if they're making moves to clear cap up, or, you know, potentially, you know, they can package this Horford deal and some other money or something. But, you know, it's just, it's not a big free agency destination. You know, and I think that they would be better served, you know, in the draft than kind of the flexibility that getting rid of Kemba's contract gave them. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I'm a big person that thinks draft picks, like, it's the same thing I talk about on the NFL side. I would rather have the draft picks and do your scouting and try to hit on those. So if they get out of Horford's contract, that puts them under the cap by $11 million. So you can't really sign, obviously, a max free agent with that kind of money. And you know, there are some big free agents that are coming up, between, you know, CP3, Kawhi, DeRozan, Lowry, Conley, Ball, Schroeder. So you have a lot of, you know, free agents are out there, but I don't know if $11 million is enough to get any of them. Now, if you do like a sign and trade, you can finagle the cap and stuff like that in basketball. So I'm not sure, maybe if that's their goal to add a true point guard. Cause you know, right now with what they've done, I think that moves Marcus Smart to be their point guard, which he held his own, but I kind of like Marcus Smart better as you're kind of going back and forth between point guard, shooting guard, more of your defensive energy guy than a starting point guard. I mean, that's how I prefer Marcus Smart in the situation. It's kind of weird. So that's why I think it's kind of weird they stocked up on so many centers in the situation. They really thinned themselves out point guard. So there's got to be some kind of game plan by Brad Stevens where it's going to be, you know, that's just my guess, like a sign and trade for a point guard. But yeah, and on the flip side, then it's OKC. So full rebuild mode, three first round picks. They don't have much there. So I guess you're completely rebuilding from scratch there for OKC. So looking at this stage, so I mean, who do you think won this trade with what we just talked out? Like, can you see someone that you could say clearly won the trade?
Oklahoma City. I think yeah. It just makes really sense on there. And I'm with you on, you know, draft picks, and they're just kind of, you know, they're using their cap to maximize assets. It's kind of like, you know, Hinkie 2.0, process 2.0 now, maybe a little more advanced than just blatantly. I mean, well one, no, you know, they actually did tank as blatantly as almost yeah. any team I've seen last year by giving, you know,
bench Horford.
Yeah, no, they shut, you know, their star down, and they played Pokuševski like 30 minutes a game. It was agreed. Yeah, Horford's another one too. They just told him to go home, and you know, I don't think the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander injury was nearly as bad as they, you know, how quickly they acted on it. But they're there's a huge swing in the pick that they have from Houston potentially. I think it's like 1 through 4 protected. And so it's 50% chance that they get like Houston's number 5 pick versus 50% that they don't get the Houston pick. And then it ends up that they instead get like a low Miami pick or something. So it's this crazy. We honestly, our whole podcast could just be reading the Oklahoma City for future assets. Just very dryly. But, you know, like I think they're taking, you know, just huge shots. And, you know, some of these ones that they have in these Houston picks, for example, are look like they have phenomenal value.
And I think the other thing that's interesting is they have so much cap space available. I wouldn't be surprised if they take on another contract and somehow find another first round pick somewhere, because there's always teams trying to shed contracts. And some teams just don't care about the first round picks. They just throw them around just to get, you know, just to free up cap space. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see them make one more trade this offseason just with how much cap space they have, because they literally have no one that costs any money outside of Kemba Walker on their books right now. So,
yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see how long they kind of go with this tank job. You know, it's things like the Kemba Walker contract at 2 years, $36 million is like egregious this year. But then next year with it be expiring, that might be a saving grace for the next terrible contract. And, you know, does some other team want to give them another first round pick to take that next terrible contract or something? So it's just kind of like a crazy cycle they're getting into. And then it's just, you know, when do they want to turn this around and actually compete?
It's going to be a trust the process 2.0. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Let's so that's all the news. Let's get into what we really want to cover right now, which is the playoff basketball. So we're going to go through the each one of the rounds in the second round, kind of give a quick recap, some breakdown, some information there. And then from there, we'll move on to the previews of the next rounds. So the first one we have up right now is what I said, Tejas, is I claim this as being the championship of basketball already. It was in the second round. To me, the Bucks and the Nets was the championship. To me, it's kind of whoever wins that one is, I feel like, the clear contender to win everything. But once again, that's just my opinion. And I actually hope I'm not right, because I do like these other teams that are in the Final Four. I think it's really interesting to see a variety, a difference, you know. And it's unfortunate we don't have LeBron, we don't have the big markets in there. But at the same time, I think every once in a while, I love seeing something like this. That's just me personally. So, but let's be honest. If the Nets didn't have their injury stages, they win that series, right? They have to win the series, in my opinion.
100%. I honestly like the Milwaukee Bucks were pretty underwhelming, and I thought that they were better than they were. And, you know, hats off to Brooklyn, and that, you know, they almost pulled that off by just an amazing Durant performance. But just, you know, so many of the questions with the Bucks offense, I think. You know, you thought they kind of cured that by, you watch that Miami series and they're really flowing. They have a good bench. And then just that, you know, a lot of what the problem was with Miami last year just, you know, popped up again with Giannis taking, you know, crazy jumpers and Middleton not being aggressive and getting no bench, you know, production at all. You know, the series question marks, and Vegas has them as the favorite at this point. But, you know, I would probably put my money on the Suns.
I think Durant was weird seeing a team that I wanted to hate. Like, I wanted to hate the Nets because of their three superstars. But watching Durant as the lone superstar, because Harden was, you know, when he came back clearly too early. Like, on defense, I feel like you and me could have blew by him because he just couldn't move, like, laterally. He was just kind of there because, based on his name, that's kind
almost,
of how I
almost
saw
worse
him.
Than that. He was almost a double agent in that, you know, he would make life more difficult by on Durant by just holding the ball to like 7 seconds in the shot clock and then giving it to Durant. You know, so, 100%.
But that game made me miss like Kevin Durant on the Supersonics, like, you know, the lone person that really got to do everything. Like, I really miss watching that. And I actually got to reappreciate Kevin Durant. I know a lot of people kind of throw shade at him. They don't like what he's doing these days, kind of with like the team joining and stuff like that. But I feel like for a couple of games, I got to appreciate Kevin Durant at his peak again, which, you know, I'll not enjoy next year, because obviously next year they'll all be healthy if they're playing together. So I thought it was impressive though. Durant was 35, 10, and 5 for the series, which is really, you know, the last couple of games. So it was to me, it was impressive to watch.
He was fantastic. And honestly, I don't think we've ever got to see him like that, just because when he was with Oklahoma City, it was always Westbrook just dominating the ball and the usage. And, you know, he was kind of a great finisher, but just Westbrook took, was kind of the primary creator. And then obviously when he got into the Golden State system, Draymond and Curry moved the ball and, he would just kind of finish at the end of quarter. So this was the first time I think the question was, could he be a great passer like LeBron? And I think he answered that as a strong affirmative. So it'll be interesting to see if Brooklyn and kind of incorporates that more going forward.
Yeah. And, I'm going to save my, I guess, some of the Bucks talk for when we do a preview here in a little bit with them against the Hawks. So we'll just end with this one part here for this series recap. So for the Nets, I think this is a fairly easy answer, but for each one of these, teams that lost in this round, we were going to kind of talk about what they need to do to take the next step. I probably don't even have to ask you, but the Nets, but they
get healthy and run it back, it'll be interesting to see them. Those pieces were great for them. I don't know if Blake will come back. Brown was obviously like just a huge energizer for them. And just finding those right role guys that do
Claxton,
small defensive things, but that star power, is really something that I think will just carry them. And I completely agree with you that we would be having a very different conversation, and it might not even be a fun conversation. And if they're all healthy, and this could be a pretty boring Brooklyn championship run if we were in a different reality right now.
Yeah. And it's weird, cause I think I was rooting for the Clippers, cause in my opinion, I saw the Clippers as the only team that could probably stop a full Nets team, but I'm glad I don't have to root for that anymore. So we can go back to just fun basketball, in my opinion. But all right, so stick at the East. So we have the Hawks and the 76ers. The Hawks won Game 7. I think it's their first Ron Gates 7 win ever in their history in the playoffs. So that was kind of impressive. I think the obvious thing to talk about is Simmons, but before we get to those conversations, just really quickly, something I looked up, the four losses for the 76ers were 17 points. To factor in how important those 17 points were, Ben Simmons out there on missed free throws because he shot 15 for 45. So it's kind of crazy. Like, I didn't really realize that until I went back and did some research. I'm like, hey, where could they have gotten these 17 points? Because when the 76ers won, it was pretty clear cut. We were the dominant team. But when the Hawks won, man, they, and two of those wins, they came back. They had no part of coming back, and the 76ers let them come back. It should be the 76ers moving on against a potentially healthy Nets team. So, but here we are in bizarro world is the exact opposite. So, I think this is what makes the Hawks team even more dangerous, is they find ways to win now against teams, let's be honest, that are supposed to be better than them. So, I thought that was impressive. What about you?
100% impressive. No Bogdanovich at at the end there, and no DeAndre Hunter throughout the whole series. And they, dug down and found a way to win. Honestly, I don't like watching them that much. And just that, some of these, getting a bunch of calls with the Trae Young jumping into defenders and stuff, it's pretty fun. Like, particularly like Game 6, I thought was one of the worst quarters basketball I've ever seen, where it was just that free throw shooting contest. Not saying that's not the dumb thing for them to do when you have Ben Simmons on the other end shooting free throws for the 76ers, not to take away from their performance, I thought they really pulled it out, and it was a really impressive win in a series that I thought they were more injured and less talented, and they still found a way to win.
Here's more anti-Ben Simmons stats for you. I got Curry shot 31 for 52 from three-point range at a 59% clip, and Ben Simmons shot 33% from free throws. So that's just I didn't realize how well Seth Curry shot that game. 31 for 52 from three for 59%. I'm just gonna say it again. That's kind of insane that he took that many and made that many. 59% clip. So,
wow, that is crazy.
So he was the number two behind Joel Embiid. It was weird. Tobias Harris was not as good as he should have been, and Simmons disappeared. I think the stat is for Simmons that he had three field goal attempts in seven games in the fourth quarter. Did you see that?
Yeah, no. So that's a crazy stat. I've kind of decided to get Pulse of Sixer Nation by going on the YouTube clip of where he kind of just blew by his defender, and then just instead of taking like a dunk or a layup, decided to pass it to Thibault. Yeah. And just like reading the comments and the anger of Sixer Nation, I think just is so fascinating, because I mean, honestly, he's, you know, Stephen A's yelling to trade him for CJ McCollum right now, and you know, like the Sixer fans, you know, if they need a fall guy, I think it is Ben Simmons. Although in his defense, I do think other people, you know, Tobias Harris, I thought that really had a terrible game. Yeah. Unlike Simmons, he shot a lot and shot poorly. And I think the team really missed Danny Green.
100%.
You know, 100%. He was just someone that really knew how to space for them, just shoot threes, you know, played all year with those guys, and kind of, you know, those actions that Simmons runs, you know, the other guys like George Hill, I thought was just, you know, completely ineffective for them both defensively and offensively. They didn't get anything out of Milton. Maxey didn't have a great series. You know, Korkmaz really didn't do much. So, you know, I think that, you know, as the Lakers fall guy of last year, Danny Green actually could have really helped him in the series.
And talk about for Ben Simmons, is there a worse city to be in when you don't do something wrong in Philadelphia? Because I don't think there is a worse city to be in when you're the target of the anger of the fans of a city. Because I don't know, you're close to Philly. I don't know how much you've ever heard Philly, like local news and radio, but they are ruthless. Like the year after the Super Bowl and the Eagles won the Super Bowl, they were calling for, you know, a rebuild after a couple of games, just because after like just things don't go well. Like Philly just overreacts to everything. So I can only imagine how much worse it is being in Philly compared to somewhere else. So. But this trans man.
Honestly, if you were in like a Ben Simmons jersey last night, you might have gotten jumped on Broad Street. Like it is a very loud town that lets you know what they're thinking. And you know, I think the anger is just, for whatever reason, you know, being channeled on Ben Simmons. So we'll see what they do. I personally think he you know, they got to keep him. You know, articles. I just read some crazy article about he's, you know, maybe always shot with the wrong hand and is now maybe going to get caught into changing hands or something. So nothing's off the table right now.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Oh, that's rough. But let's change gears on Ben Simmons really quick. Let's throw out the positives that, he was effective in keeping Trae Young at bay, because Trae Young only shot 39% for the series. He, you know, when he did guard him, he did a really good job on him. Just offensive, he was non-existent. But to more so change the gears, and let's not blame Ben Simmons here, because they had a chance to win that game in game seven. The 76ers were down by four, and Joel Embiid was at the top of the key. He got, I guess you can call it an ISO on Gallinari, and he went to a spin move is what that would be for a 7-footer. It looked pretty slow, but Gallinari picked his pocket. Huerter got the steal, or picked up the steal, threw it to Gallinari for a dunk. So maybe we blame Embiid and he's just getting off the hook. Maybe Tobias Harris is just getting off the hook with the bad shooting. It feels like everyone picked on Ben Simmons just because it was convenient because of free throw shooting. So
yeah, Simmons had over 10 assists and just two turnovers. You know, Embiid had eight turnovers in game seven and eight turnovers in game six. And I think that, you know, a culprit here also might be just the conditioning of Embiid, in that, you know, he has these huge runs that kind of come in the third quarter. You know, very well might be that, you know, you just see it in his body language too. You know, he's reaching on his hips. He's kind of laboring down the court, you know, and I feel like that, you know, those Hawks runs and the pace kind of affect him. And that's part of, you know, those terrible leads that were blown was the lack of conditioning of Embiid. So I hold him responsible, but I do think the pulse of Philadelphia views him as at least battling and not afraid to shoot. But you know, do you think Simmons or Embiid bears some of the responsibility there?
Yeah, there's some in the fourth quarter, some of those games. He definitely, now we could also say it's Ben Simmons' fault too, as being the point guard and not running through him, and three shot attempts in seven games is insane. It really is insane as a player that's as athletic as he is. Like, he should be able to drive to the rim pretty well. But yeah, I think there is some blame for Embiid. He did look tired at the end, kind of like when we saw Durant at the end of that last game, trying to carry that team on his own. You know, Durant was completely carrying the team. Embiid, I think he I don't think is really at the level where his cardio is ready to do what this team needs him to do, because he's been held back so much with his injuries, his foot injuries, all the years off, all the minute caps, all the limitations. And then when you need him, you can't put him on a limit cap. You can't, you know, it's not the regular season, it's the playoffs. So they may have to, they need to find some kind of middle ground to be like, maybe rest him more in the game when they have certain leads, and kind of moderate more in the fourth quarter. Cause how effective is he when he's going to miss it open late? Like, I think game six or something like that, he had a chance to put them ahead and miss a completely wide open layup, somehow like airballed it almost. So yeah, I 100% agree. It's not all on Ben Simmons. I want to sit here and laugh at these free throw numbers and stuff like that, but it's on Tobias Harris. It's on the missing Danny Green. It's, you know, it's on Embiid a little bit in the fourth quarter, I think collectively, and still they're so close. It's so sad because the combined four losses are by 17 points. They're so close. So I don't think they should, you know, well, actually I'm going to ask you here in a second, help me before I say, but moving on, like as the losers of the series, what do the 76ers have to do to go farther next year?
Ooh. So I go back and forth. Can the Simmons and Embiid not necessarily exist, but is that the optimal? And what can you get for Ben Simmons if you do split them up? And so let me ask you this. You're Daryl Morey. I'm Colin. I'm the Indianapolis Pacers. I will give you Malcolm Brogdon for Ben Simmons.
I think he's – well, okay, I'll just say no to entertain you. That's just me. I wouldn't trade him for that. So
I am now the Portland Trail Blazers. I am calling you as CJ McCollum. He's a previous All-Star. He will give you the Embiid the spacing he needs. You can play Thibel with McCollum, whereas when he played Simmons and Thibel, that even compounds the lack of fit of Embiid and Simmons. So CJ McCollum, are we doing it?
No, you can't be emotionally invested in this loss and how sudden it is. I do like the idea of CJ McCollum as a creator. I don't think he's a good pair for Damian Lillard. I do like him there, but at the same time, I would need more to even really consider that trade. That's just me personally.
So, this is now the Pelicans. We just met with Zion Williamson and his family. They want Ingram the hell out of town. We will give you, even though there's no fit whatsoever with Simmons and Ingram, although Simmons is going to be the five, and then we're gonna play Zion at the four. We can't shoot, but we're just going to dominate people athletically. Will you say yes to Brandon Ingram for Ben Simmons if you're Daryl Moore?
No, I can't. I can't do that.
That's a terrible fit, by the way.
Yeah, that is. That is. I think for both teams, it's a terrible fit, actually. But no. Yeah, no.
That's all I got, bro. But it at least makes you think about all that stuff. And you know, I'm pro. Also, don't trade somebody at their low value. And you know, maybe this is like the low moment where you know, like, somebody, you know, the hitting rock bottom before you go to AA, you know, that's what I'm hoping Simmons is at right now, is he's like, oh my God. Just he listens to Philly radio, you know, like, just, and then looks outside and somebody just throws a snowball at his window or something. And so then maybe he just starts But you know, I mean, honestly, his shooting stroke is not bad. You know, it's just a complete mental thing. So, you know, I don't know if we can sports psychiatrist all summer and, you know, get the Drew Hamlin jumpers going, and we'll see what we can do here. But you know, I would kind of at least ride it out to a trade deadline, but and just always be kind of at least curious if I'm Daryl as far as what is out there though.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, like you, the value's too low. And I think what they're saying right now is that they're going to keep him. And that's not, even if they don't agree with that mindset, they have to say that, because you can't build trade value by saying, yeah, we want to get rid of the guy. Because then all the other teams are going to know they're desperate. So you have to build trade value. So it makes sense what they're saying. Now, you know, Doc was very unclear. You know, we don't have the question or the answer is what he said, even though a lot of people just want to look at the part of the article where he just says we don't have the answer. He also said we don't have the question. So to clarify, Doc Rivers isn't really completely shitting on Ben Simmons. And Bede was obviously upset about it. But, you know, I go back to the CJ McCollum. Like, I'm intrigued by that because I do like the idea of a playmaker in the backcourt. It's just, who's the point guard in that situation if you get rid of Ben Simmons? Because Ben Simmons is technically your point guard. He's I don't know. It's just, it's hard because if you get rid of him, you need a point guard back. And how many people are willing to trade away their point guard for someone that can't really shoot? I mean, it's tough. All right, let's move on. Let's move on and talk Jazz and Clippers. So what a weird series. Just series tied 2-2 between the Jazz and the Clippers. And then they lose Kawhi Leonard. And I guess my thought process today, just don't know about you, but it's over. The Jazz got it in the bag. They can't win without Kawhi and only Paul George. And then the Clippers pull it out. You know, I think they went down two games in both series. They went down first two and won the next four in the series. So what were your thoughts on the Clippers losing Kawhi Leonard and then still kind of asserting themselves and winning the series?
You know, it's probably same thoughts as you, as you know, especially after that Kawhi performance where he was just so dominant in the game where he got injured. You're thinking, man, that guy is just the stud, and you know, a Clippers team that kind of questioned their fortitude even with them. Like, you know, you thought it was they would kind of just mentally quit, and absolutely the opposite. Amazing performance from those guys, and you know, and Utah not good on their end. What's the pulse right now in Utah?
I think I think it's a mixture of disbelief, but not surprised, which really sucks. And you can see right away, their immediate reaction is, what can we do to fix this situation? And I've seen all these crazy circulations of, oh, let's just trade everyone for Ben Simmons. We'll trade Bogdanović and Clarkson and someone else for Simmons. And it's just kind of like, we've seen this before where the Jazz have no shooters. Now you have all the shooters and now you want to do something crazy. Like, I guess, you know, they expect more in the city now that they have a good foundation. But I think to me, it wasn't really anything about the Clippers. To me, it was when they not having Mike Conley. That offense is so different with Mike Conley, like a true point. I just don't think some people that watch it understand how important a true point guard is for a lot of these teams. And Donovan Mitchell, even though he's a phenomenal talent, I think him and Devin Booker just they just raised their level through these playoffs. But with Donovan Mitchell, they started double teaming him. They started kind of forcing him into bad decisions, and he needed a point guard there to help handle the load. And Mike Conley just, you know, he wasn't there the whole series. He played the last game of the series, and that was it. So I think the Jazz really, the fans just need to kind of be patient. It's kind of, it's a weird team build, though, right, Tejas? I mean, the Jazz are just kind of Rudy Gobert and a bunch of guys at jack threes. Is that sustainable to win a championship, you think?
The Gobert thing's tough. It's like, you know, can you, you know, a guy that's so dominant in the regular season, that's so dependent upon, you know, the screen setting for his offense and that your whole defense is built around, like, can you accept taking him out of playoff games at certain points? And I mean, he's, you know, a couple series now where, you know, his inability to guard the 3-point line and the small ball teams, you know, they've just killed the Jazz. And so it's very tough. I don't have an easy answer for what do you do with that? I mean, would you bench Gobert if you were the coach?
No, I don't. To me, I just think they didn't do a good job running their offense. It's almost like the coach just kind of Quinn Snyder just looked the other way. It was like, all right, well, Donovan Mitchell is just going to make these shots. Like, at the start of these games, you see a lot of good ball movement. You see the Joe Ingles, Bogdanović. Clarkson's different because Clarkson doesn't know how to look at anyone. He just jacks threes when people are open. But when Ingles and Bogdanović are in, and a couple of these other guys are in, you see some good ball rotation, and you see find open. Like usually, you find like Royce O'Neal open. You find Ingles open. Things you don't, you know, things that you need for your offense. But then towards the end of the game, it's just kind of like Donovan Mitchell ISO, and it's just it's easy to kind of close on him, and they don't have, you know, any ball movement. So it's just they seem like a very lost team in offense that needs a little more creativity. And Mike Conley's a free agent. They have to bring Mike Conley back or replace him with someone as his skill level. So to me, you know, I think they need their point guard. I think that's why the Jazz just couldn't make it.
Yeah. And just hats off to these Clippers, man. Doing deep dives on Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson. This is really one of the first times I've like watched a lot of Reggie Jackson, and just that, you know, that wingspan he has really makes a difference. And I think allows them to kind of do these small ball lineups pretty effectively, and that it didn't feel like they were giving up a ton of offensive glass. You know, but really smart, and you know, and our Ty Lue criticism, you know, that, you know, he started out the series playing Cousins and then, you know, kind of found his way into, you know, some good, great rotations. And then, you know, just the Terrence Mann, it really made me a convert. I'm a fan of that guy.
Yeah. The Reggie Jackson thing completely caught me off guard because I didn't expect that out of Reggie Jackson. I've seen him play before, but I've never seen him get to play with the ball as much, because usually, you know, it's obviously a Kawhi and Paul George show out there, and also the Patrick Beverley Rondo thing. You know, you don't get to see a lot of Reggie Jackson, I think, and now this is the first time we get to see, at least for me, this is the first time I've seen a lot of Reggie Jackson as probably the healthy number two. And with that, Rondo played 44 minutes that whole series, which I don't think we expected that to happen. So I think Reggie Jackson kind of, you know, maybe it's bad for people playing as Clippers because, you know, Reggie Jackson now is a three. If Kawhi comes back, that could be very dangerous. As three people that can create. Because the one thing I did notice this series, I don't know if anyone saw this, but Reggie Jackson was not scared of Gobert. He went after Gobert. He was driving on Gobert. He was running circles around him. And he made Gobert look like a very average defender. It was kind of crazy. But so I guess going forward, what do the Jazz need to do, in your opinion, to take that next step? Do you see any easy moves or any, you know, do they stick with it?
Ooh, it's not easy because I kind of agree with you on Conley, and the problem is just he's not getting any younger, you know, and so
no.
I don't, you know, maybe finding a new point guard that just, you know, can handle some of those responsibilities. But, you know, I do kind of think that, you know, when teams are really going crazy with small ball with them, that they do need to find a better answer for, you know, maybe sitting Rudy.
Yeah.
It's just a tough, bitter pill that we're seeing right now with this NBA, but, you know, just this spacing and frantic pace and just, you know, where are these centers? You know, we'll get into maybe talking about, you know, the next matchups and stuff, but, you know, one of the things that I was screaming about throughout the whole Milwaukee Bucks series was just how, you know, Lopez was kind of, in my view, killing the Bucks defense. You know, I think it was game five with basically the game where Jeff Green went off was all KD pick and rolls with Jeff Green. And then Lopez just wasn't fast enough to kind of, you know, catch up with Jeff Green on, you know, on the block. And so, you know, that it's, you know, these regular season, you know, amazing defensive statistic guys like Lopez and Gobert, you know, in the playoffs, you know, just the small ball lineups just seem to have an answer for them. And I don't have a good answer for you as far as what these teams can do about it other than take them off the court.
Yeah. And so, to me, it just drives me crazy. Some of the offense, I don't know how you feel, but some of the offenses to me are just very like Donovan Mitchell ISO. Like it, at some point, it's just not, you can't keep throwing the same thing out there. It's not going to work. So, I mean, to me, the Clippers look like they were just coached, which I don't think I would have expected that from Ty Lue, but in my opinion, he outcoached him. You've seen, like I said, the Clippers went down 2-0 both series, and they came back and won. So we'll talk about the Suns and Clippers here in a little bit. Let's move on to the Suns Nuggets series. So this was the represented best by the Suns and four guy. if anyone saw that with the whole Suns fan fighting the Nuggets fans, I think in Denver, and the Booker hooked him up with some tickets or something like that. they had him out at game one. So, you know, what better way to rally that city by just, you know, rewarding someone like that for defending their team. And that, you know, a part of me, like, it's kind of not really sure I'm on board with rewarding something like that, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of cool to see. But I was 100% wrong, Tejas, on the Nuggets. I thought they could pull that series off, and all the things that I said that I thought they could do well, I think the exact opposite happened. You were spot on with that one. I was completely wrong. The only thing that I think I got right was I just kind of said, I think Jokic can put Ayton in foul trouble. And a couple times he did, but the Nuggets never took advantage of it. And outside of Jokic, there was no one on the Nuggets was a threat to the Suns, not a single person. I think Will Barton for the last game 3 and game 4 was kind of a little bit of a spark, but he came back from being hurt. So the Nuggets just had nothing. And if we've ever seen a vintage Chris Paul, Jesus, this was probably the most vintage Chris Paul performance we'll ever see. I don't know if everyone was tracking just how unstoppable he was. He averaged 25.5 points per game, 5 rebounds, 10 assists, shot 62% from the field. He had 5 turnovers in 4 games, and he shot 22 for 22 from the free throw line. When anyone has a point guard doing that, you don't lose. Like, you just don't lose. Like, the Nuggets had no chance once Chris Paul was locked in for the 1 of the 3 series he's allowed to play in right now, pretty much. So what did you think of the Chris Paul performance?
That was a fantastic performance. It's funny. It's almost like it seems like the way with the way the NBA turns with the drama so quickly, you know, thinking about this series, you know, going back to you know, since it's ended so quickly in 4 games, it's almost hard to recall going back a week or two. That was just a classic Chris Paul, you know, hitting all his spots and, you know, just a amazing, amazing performance. And I think I told you, you know, in the last podcast we did, you know, my sentimental guy right now, just because of the playoff failures and because of he's restored, you know, unredeemable franchises all across the NBA. Yep. You know, he's my guy. And I just think the Suns are firing on COVID aside. I think the Suns are firing on all cylinders now. And, you know, just Booker just continues to be just phenomenal. And you know, to kind of compare these guys to Utah, you know, one of the things I think we talked about Utah is, you know, that you have like 3 or 4 different playmakers, and that you could play through Bogdanovich, you could play through Joe Ingles. But the problem is just like, when the chips are on the line, what do you really trust? And I think Suns have, you know, 2 guys in just Paul and Booker that they, you know, and they just run the offense through them the whole game. And that's better than, you know, any option Utah has, obviously, and most teams out there. So, you know, Denver just didn't have the horses to go with them. I think Porter got injured pretty early in that series and wasn't 100%. And so, you know, with that was just another kind of nail in the coffin for them, in my opinion.
The thing that drives me crazy is your comparison with the Jazz and the Suns is the way those two teams play. If you have Booker and Mitchell as kind of the same player, which I kind of do see them as the same player. Booker, I think, was a little more consistent in the playoffs. But then you have Chris Paul and you have Connolly. You have the guys that can create, and then you have the guys that can kick out to. If you're kicking out to Clarkson and Ingles and Bogdanovich, you would think that the Jazz would be a more successful team than kicking out to Jay Crowder and Bridges and guys like that. But here we are, like, you know, the Suns, I think the Suns just run the better offense. So, and you know, I was actually worried game 1, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, but you know, I was worried about game 1 with no Chris Paul. It really scares me seeing Devin Booker. And I think the Clippers just, you know, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but getting back to the Nuggets and the Suns series, man, Jokic just needed some help. I had Austin Rivers shooting. He shot 26% from 3-point range, which you needed him to kind of have a Seth Curry type of shooting for them to have a chance. Aaron Gordon averaged under 10 points per game. And like you said, Porter beginning hurt. Like, all these things they didn't have a fair chance against the Suns, who are red hot, the hottest team in basketball right now. And you know, the final question is, what does Nuggets need to do? I could probably answer the question for you, because I honestly think the Nuggets were best suited to compete if they had a healthy Jamal Murray. I mean, to me, they just run it back with a healthy Jamal Murray, right? That's what they got to do.
Yeah. One of the things that's a little scary for me about them is just, I mean, they'll be fantastic offensively with Murray, Porter, Jokic. I do wonder if they will be good enough defensively. The Aaron Gordon addition was great, and I actually thought he was pretty good defensively in the playoffs. In some of the actions that I was seeing, they were still really going at Porter. And although I think he got a lot better in his second year than last year, that still is something that I think could maybe be, you know, and I am just nitpicking. I think they'll be one of the best teams, but I do question whether they'll be a championship team because of their defense.
Yeah. And, you know, and next year, the good thing about for the Nuggets and the Jazz is kind of, you have the Suns may not have Chris Paul next year. The Lakers will have a 36, 37 year old LeBron with all their money invested in AD and LeBron. So, you know, the Nuggets and Jazz could have a better chance next year, which is kind of weird to say when the Lakers got knocked out kind of so early. But, let's just get right into the preview. We got four teams left, Ages. We got we're going through the West first. We got the Suns and Clippers. Now, they obviously, you know, they already played game one, which we'll talk about here as we go through this. But to kind of recap the regular season, the Clippers won 2 of 3 against the Suns and won. And I think the one win the Suns had, the Clippers didn't have Kawhi Leonard. So technically, maybe a little skewed. So you can kind of see maybe the Clippers are better against the Suns when both teams are healthy. But the series is obviously lacking star power. So we have the reports of Chris Paul testing positive for COVID, I think around June 16th. He's already ruled out for game one and game two. We saw what happened without him in game one. And then Kawhi has what's thought to be a sprained ACL, not an ACL tear. I know there's a lot of swelling. They're waiting for that to go down. And he's already been ruled out of game one and game two. So we already don't have those two for game two also. So I don't know about you, Tejas. I think I was a little worried to watch the star power matchup without Kawhi and Chris Paul. But I think game one was probably the best thing we could have seen, the best case situation. You agree? Because it seemed like Booker and Paul George went back and forth. And Booker was red hot. Like, he could not miss. And he had a triple-double with 40 points. What did you think about that performance?
Yeah, and Booker's just incredible. And then, you know, George stepped up and played a great game too. So, you know, it was a very good game. It is sad, though. You know, you'd obviously love CP3 and Kawhi to kind of really be going at it. And, I'd consider it a much more, you know, even series if Kawhi was healthy, you know, if both teams were you know, I'd really think it would be a coin flip if that was the case. But, you know, without – a healthy Kawhi, I am definitely leaning pretty hard towards the Suns. And then you're talking about a little bit about the Suns shooting, and you know, they really, you know, just, we didn't mention Campaign, who has just been another fantastic playmaking option for them, as well as guys like Cam Johnson, who I think has one of the sweetest strokes out there. And so that's a sneaky guy that can come in and just, you know, like just stand on a three outside the 3-point line and just light it up if he gets open looks. So, you know, basically just the Suns in that Lakers series, I don't think just gave them any breathing room. And I just don't think any team has been as consistent possession to possession, just getting good shots, always playing good defense. So I've just been so impressed with them. Currently the series with the Clippers right now has Suns minus 440. So they're pretty heavy favorites. Bucks are still NBA title favorites. You know, basically it's like plus 200 Suns, plus 150 Bucks, but I really do disagree with that, and I think the Suns are the best team going right now. Where are you on the Suns, Brian?
Yeah, I keep doubting them, and they keep just throwing it back in my face. Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, they're so well-rounded. I also think they're probably one of the best coach teams in the NBA. Every time I watch them play, it looks like Monty Williams is always doing something offensively, defensively. He's always inspiring, talking to people. He just looks like a really good coach for that team. I think with Chris Paul, it's kind of hard. I'm starting to, as I watch these playoffs, you know, I haven't watched consistent basketball like this in a while. And I'm starting to re-understand and rewatch and just how important these elite point guards are in the league, especially ones that can shoot and distribute, not just, you know, Steph Curry is like, you know, he's an elite shooter, but he's not as great as a passer as some of these other point guards like Chris Paul. So it's starting to make me like realize that, hey, you know, Trae Young and Chris Paul could be leading their teams, depending on, you know, just how good of a point guard they are for those two sides of their game. So, you know, I want to say that, you know, it should be the Bucks to win, but it's, you know, it's hard for me to look away from the Suns. I think they may be the most balanced team that's left.
It would be interesting if it like Suns Bucks, if that does come down to it, just because I do feel like the Bucks really will get a ton of points off turnovers. Yeah. And so, you know, it's just that minimum, having that veteran point guard that to kind of prevent, you know, it's just turnovers. And, you know, Paul is someone that's just so good at that I think it'll be a tough game for the Bucks in half court offense. So, I'm big on the Suns, and they just keep backing it up.
Yeah. And man, I just want to, I think watching Cameron Payne, just how good he is as a backup point guard for this team, how important he is as a backup point guard. Cause I remember watching him when he was young, he kind of bounced around with a bunch of teams. He really didn't fit very well. Even I think it was in OKC for a while too, but it seems like he kind of found his groove. And then when Chris Paul came out, he looked like he had a good handle. So, you know, maybe Chris Paul's Cameron Payne's learning from Chris Paul, and he's just able to help that ease. Cause if we're going to talk about game one now, I was worried that I was going to get the same Donovan Mitchell effect of kind of what happened against the Clippers, where Donovan Mitchell, they kind of figured him out. They knew when to double team him. They knew which way to push him to, left or right. And I was worried that Booker was going to do that, and he didn't. And campaign, you know, he did a little bit of to help him, but man, Booker looks so good. It makes me wonder that if the Clippers are going to adapt as the series goes on and really tighten the screws. Because I think it's a very different series when they have Chris Paul, when they don't have Chris Paul. So, the question I guess I'm going to ask you is, you know, what do you think the Clippers have to do to win the series?
Get Leonard healthy. Without him, I think it's a really tough task. I do think that they're best playing that small ball and frenetic and just shooting threes, and maybe you can win a track meet with a ton of threes. Just going to that kind of what they did to beat Utah, you know, is kind of the what I would do. So I don't know why they played DeMarcus Cousins 20 minutes. You know, I would minimize Zubac, and then, you know, I would try and space Ayton, and I would, you know, take the pill of Ayton, you know, getting 15 rebounds and scoring 25 points on me by just trying to space and pace, and just see if you can get Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson and hitting threes.
Yeah, I think for the Clippers, it's going to be tough. I actually think the Clippers' best chance is just hopefully CP3 doesn't come back, obviously, because I think they can figure out how to double Booker, kind of like Mitchell. But I think if CP3 comes back and they have to deal with Booker and CP3, I just think it's, I think it's done. I don't think they can do anything about that. So, I kind of like what you're saying. I think this is the Sun series to lose. However, after watching the Clippers be so resilient in the last two series, I guess we'll see what happens with this game too. I mean, Paul George, I think he got cold kind of later on in the game, but he was going shot for shot with Booker for a while. It was fun to watch. But yeah, I think, you know, if you had a pretty good series, I'm guessing you think the Suns are going to win. So how many games do you think the Suns are going to win?
I would think maybe Suns in five. One of the other factors too is just, you know, Clippers have been in these long series wars. You know, Suns, yep, obviously just swept the Nuggets. So, you know, I do think that they can be in, you know, the rest makes a big difference, and that, you know, these Clippers that have been going, putting on seven game series and a lot of playoff miles, that kind of thing, can kind of, you know, hurt them too. So, you know, obviously, particularly if Paul comes back in game three, I think it could be a quick series. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. And I think the difference between, you know, obviously they both have their superstar to come back and look forward to. The difference though with Kawhi and Chris Paul is Kawhi's got a sprained ACL. We don't know how bad that knee is. We saw Harden come back early. We saw Conley come back early. They both were not the same. They were kind of like, I think kind of like you said earlier, they were kind of probably holding their team back a little bit. I mean, I think Conley shot like under 20% in the game he came back, and you know, he didn't even handle the ball very much at the end of the game. So I almost think that the Clippers are kind of screwed in the same situation because Chris Paul, he's just resting. Like there's nothing wrong with him. It's just COVID. If he's not really showing any crazy symptoms, he's going to come back healthy. He's going to be well rested. It's dangerous. The Clippers are kind of in a really bad situation because of the two superstars and their circumstances, in my opinion. So I think it's tough for the Clippers.
Yeah, in a weird way, it might actually be good for his shoulder, you know, that he's struggled with in the Lakers in round one. So now, you know, between the sweep of the Nuggets and these extra COVID time off, you know, it might be good for the Suns in the long run.
Yeah, if the Suns can win without Patrick Beverley attacking and hurting Chris Paul, they're probably better for them anyway. So
I love my guys like Beverley, man. He's a maniac.
Scrappy.
It was good to see him. He was kind of like a shell of himself last year in the bubble, so it was good to see him being 100% Beverley.
Yep, true. All right, so I think we're in agreement. So, you know, I'd probably put Suns in six maybe, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was four or five with just – how good they looked even without Chris Paul. So let's move on to the East side. We got the Hawks versus the Bucks. In the regular season, the Hawks won the first two. However, the most recent one, the Bucks won the first two and the Hawks won the most recent one. In one of the Bucks wins, the Hawks didn't have Trae Young or Clint Capella. So maybe it really is more of a series than we think. Tejas, with the Hawks, what do you think the Hawks have to do to win the series?
Ooh, probably very similar to what they did in Philly in that, you know, at the end of the day, if it's a free throw shooting contest, Trae Young will beat Giannis or whoever else. Giannis, but you know, the main thing that I was saying earlier is, you know, if the Bucks really start getting a lot of stops versus the Hawks, I think that's when it's over because then you get Giannis on the fast break and I think they'll go on these big runs and kind of bust out these games. But if the Hawks can basically keep it as like shooting free throws and a slower paced game, I actually think that might be really the way to beat the Bucks.
Yeah. Watching more and more of Giannis, the thing I'm saying obviously is if you let him attack the rim, you have no chance of stopping him. He's a freak, the Greek freak. He's going to attack the rim at will. You're not going to stop. I mean, you look at the Hawks. You know, they only have so many people that have could potentially stop them. You know, they got Clint Capella, who I think they're all shorter than Giannis, anyways. Like Clint Capella, John Collins. I mean, who can really guard a matchup against him? So it's kind of a matchup nightmare in a way for those people. But to me, I think the way to stop the Bucks is you let them shoot from the outside. Do whatever you can to push them the outside. In the three games that they played against the Hawks, the Bucks from three-point range shot 28%, 37%, and 32%. And inside three-point range, they were just going off. I think at a 60% clip for field goal percentage or something. So, and when you think the Bucks, I don't know about you, Tejas, but I don't think the Bucks have any really real sharp shooters that you can really be worried about other than Chris Middleton. You take away Chris Middleton, do the Bucks have a shooter that you're scared of?
Not really. Although in spots, I trust Connaughton. I trust Forbes. Yep. Holiday, you know, I got to say he played a really bad game seven overall. But then at the end of the game, he wasn't afraid to fire up, a couple of jumpers. And, you know, that's something that really meant a lot to me is just as far as the mentality. So that's kind of like, I also, speaking of mentality, when you were saying that the Hawks didn't have anyone to guard Giannis, I was thinking all that same thing can be applied to Ben Simmons in terms of a super athletic guy that they can, and, you know, so the, just the real frustration, you know, I have with Ben Simmons, it's, you know, I don't have that with Giannis, and that even if he's shooting you know, it's the opposite. You know, he's shooting too much, even, and he's not afraid to go to the line, even if he doesn't shoot a great percentage. And that, I mean, that's what the Bucks need. So as long as he stays aggressive, you know, I think they'll be fine.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. So that's for the Hawks to win. I think for the Bucks, I don't think we have to really, you know, I guess I'll ask anyways, but for the Bucks to win, what do the Bucks have to do? Because to me, it's really, you stop Trae Young, not as a shooter, but also as a distributor. And that's the key to stopping the Hawks. Do you have anything for the Bucks' path to victory?
So I just think it'll be defense will create offense. You know, you put Holiday on Trae Young, just get them out of their rhythms. You have PJ Tucker rough up everybody. Honestly, I thought Tucker played such a great series versus Brooklyn. I think he was like the most reliable night in, night out guy that the Bucks had. I think he's I'm a huge fan of his, and that, you know, those Houston teams with Harden, him and Chris Paul, I really felt he was just such an unsung hero and almost getting them close to a championship. So, you know, I think he makes a huge impact on the game, even if it's not in the box score numbers. So, you know, but I do think it'll be a defense makes offense. And then if you get Giannis going downhill, that you know, these Bucks games could be, you know, big leads that, unlike the 76ers, you know, don't let Atlanta come back after you get your 10-point lead.
Yeah, I mean, because it's just attacking the Hawks. I mean, you talk about Herter, Gallinari, Bogdanović. You're not talking about, like, defensive specialists there. You're talking about just dudes that can shoot the ball very well at times, that don't move very well. And if you get Clint Capela in foul trouble, I feel like the Hawks are just absolutely screwed. It's hard to see the Hawks winning, but I'm going to trust the point guard and Trae Young and what he's done to carry these teams and make this. I think this is going to be more of a series than the Suns Clipper series. If you had to put a game and who's going to win, I think I put Bucks in six. What do you got?
That makes sense. I'd say maybe Bucks in five. But we'll see. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say Bucks in six or Bucks and seven, yeah, or something like that, even if it Trae Young can pull a couple games out of nowhere. So I do just overall see that the Bucks just team defense being too much for the Hawks.
Well, you got any bets on the series to throw out there?
So the Bucks are favored -460, Hawks are +360. You know, I was telling you the Bucks title odds overall, you know, are the favorite. Here's a fun one. So right now, odds for finals MVP. I got Giannis at +115, Booker at +250, Chris Paul at +500, Paul George at +900. Any of those bets you like? I will say Trae Young at +1200.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so this is a thing. There's a part of me that thinks the Hawks, just because they've grown out these series. I mean, no one thought they're going to beat the Knicks. I don't think a lot of people thought they were going to, and they just kind of quickly dispatched them. I mean, they should not have beat the 76ers. It just happened to go their way. And with the Bucks, I really think if they can make the Bucks into a shooting team and slow the pace down, like you talked about, I think the Hawks could win the series that way. So I think if you're throwing money out right now, the two I like are Trae Young, Chris Paul. I'm going to go back to the point guard thing. Now it's just what I'm going to stick with now. Because I think you saw what Chris Paul against the Nuggets, like if that's what he's going to be going against, like anyone, like especially if he goes against Trae Young, Trae Young can't guard Chris Paul. That's just, no one on the Hawks can guard Chris Paul on the backcourt. So, you know, I think Chris Paul is kind of a safe bet in that aspect. And then I just like the Trae Young. I like the Trae Young thing just because it's so crazy and the Hawks have made it this far anyways.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. The Devin Booker +250 is maybe my favorite out of that group. But
just gotta take a chance though.
I know. Yeah, Middleton +1600 for a deep underdog. Maybe he gets hot.
Yeah. So looking at all these series, what is the NBA Finals that you want to see?
I think I probably want to see Bucks Suns. How about you?
Yeah, I think Bucks Suns is what I want to see, but it just goes like, there's a part of me that's just really interested in watching Suns and Hawks. I don't know why. I think it's because of the cities mainly, just because I think it's just so, like, growing up, I think for us, like, we watched the Hawks just kind of be Joe Johnson and go away. You know, first round exits over and over again.
Joe Johnson on the Suns too, man. This could be the Joe Johnson revenge series.
Oh, there you go. And even the Suns. I mean, the Suns were fun to watch when we were younger, but you know, they didn't get completely that far. So, but I mean, I think what we deserve to see is Giannis and CP3, two people that we want to see succeed. You know, seeing Giannis take that next step, I think would be phenomenal, just to see him learn how to win. Kind of like, I think we want the same for Embiid at some point, you know, seeing these young superstars coming up, you know, take that next step. So I think it'd be cool to see Giannis, and even if the Hawks lose, I think they could learn a lot from that series, you know, because they're going to have some tough series. I think anything the Hawks are doing at this point is just they're ahead of the curve, honestly. I don't think anyone expected the Hawks to be as far. So I think Atlanta, either way, I think they win either way in this, even if they lose. But you're right. I think Bucks and Suns is what I would like to see.
Yeah, no, it never made a sense to me why Atlanta is more of a basketball town than it is, you know. So maybe having a superstar now in Trae Young will really make that a fun spot and scene, because you know, you just think that, like, the hip-hop culture and things like that, you know, could definitely be a crazy playoff environment.
Definitely agree with you. So all right, so we'll probably re-hit this again probably in a week or so, definitely more at the finals. We'll get more probably get more crazy playoffs, probably more in-depth playoff betting, maybe to finals on the next time we talk. But yeah, that's episode 23. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Tejas, any last comments before we get off here?
We'll have to do a Ben Simmons team odds for next year, man.
That's, I like it.
We're like over it. Under in Philly Talk Radio of how many times that they say they want to trade him.
Oh, geez. Because they have nothing to look forward to between the Eagles, and the Phillies are not really doing that great. So I think the 76ers is what the city was really banking on. So it's just not a good time to beat that guy, which is unfortunately Ben Simmons. So, all right. So thanks for joining us, guys. That's episode 23. Episode 24 next will be coming up. We'll be talking some football, some fantasy football, some season preview. So we'll catch you guys in the next one. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Thanks for the support. Have a good one.